Does your computer repair business website need work? Go to techsitebuilder.com and get the official Podnuts method for making a site that works. Welcome to Podnuts Daily, episode number 262. Podnuts Daily is a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I guess that's the best way I could put it. We bring a computer repair tech on the show each time, and he tells about what he's doing in the computer repair world, what his tips are, tricks, techniques, methods, anything he wants to say. Today, we can appreciate Jorge Hernandez, and Jorge is calling us from Florida. Jorge, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Steve. I'm glad to be on your show here. The first time that I was in your show, it was back in January of this year. And I'm glad to be back again.
Absolutely. It's actually, you actually sound much better this time.
Oh, yeah. I got my nice Plantronics headset, so I'm on the roll here.
I'm telling you, the Plantronics is getting it right. The Plantronics has sounded the best so far. If anybody thinks about calling in, Plantronics is the way to go. What's the name of your business again, Jorge?
It's 123 Computer Repair, and that's the same website, 123computerrepair.com.
Cool. All right. Well, tell us. Well, first of all, you said you're doing pretty good with your business. You're getting customers in, keeping busy.
Yes. Business is ups and down, but it's growing. I reached my customer number 200 last week.
Good.
That's not a big number, but for me, you know, what matters is that I keep adding customers to the list. And right now, my main way of promoting my business is pretty much word of mouth.
We have to say that you're only, this is your part-time gig for you at this point.
Yes. I'm a full-time employee. I work as a network administrator during the day. My time is very limited because of my day job. And, you know, but basically I'm now depending only on word of mouth. I don't have like a full advertising program yet in place, but I'm planning on taking the plunge probably in about a year or two.
Okay.
And I have to get ready for that. You know, so it's just, but right now I'm taking one day at a time and one customer at a time. So
good.
But it's been good. It's been good.
Great. So what did you prepare for us this week? What do you want to share with us?
Well, there are a couple of things that I've been listening to on different shows, and I'm just going to throw out some of the jobs that I have recently worked on, and I'm just going to give you some feedback on some of the comments that I have. So the first thing that I want to talk to is, the first job is I got a call from a lady that was having some problems with her printer.
Okay.
So I went to her house and I realized that she has a wireless printer. So this is a tip that I want to share with everybody. Before you start, you know, checking settings or going through the menu settings on the printer, just go into the computer and go to the printer settings and right click and go to the port tab and see what ports have been used, because in that section, the ports, it will tell you which IP address or which printer port name has been used. So that fix was a simple check mark on the correct IP address on the printer, and that was it. I didn't have to touch the printer. I didn't have to go into the menu settings and, you know, check the gateway or anything like that. It was a simple click and changing the port, and that was all I did.
Did you say it was a wireless printer?
It was a wireless printer, yes.
Okay. Yeah, see, this is spoken like a true network administrator. This sounds like a typical way that you would troubleshoot that on a network, too. Is that how it goes?
That's how it goes, because basically, when you set up printers on a network, you're pretty much setting up, you have two ways of setting up printers. One is sharing the printer through a workstation, which is not the right way. That's not the approach that I want to take. You set up the printers by, you know, setting them on the network. You know, the printers automatically get an IP address from the network. And that's pretty much the port that you're going to be using. So when you install the printer on a computer, you're pretty much depending on the IP address that has been assigned to the printer.
I see.
So in this case, the wireless printer had an IP address already assigned. But the lady's grandson, he was playing with a computer and he added some settings and he changed the port. So instead of having, I'll give you an example, 10.10.10.101, it was 10.10.10.105.
I see.
So I just had to uncheck 105 to 101, and that was it.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, how did that get changed? Is it something that would change automatically? Or
That's not supposed to change.
Right,
either
right.
Somebody manually went in and changed the settings by accident, or he was playing with the wrong thing. So, I mean,
gotcha. But
that was a simple fix. You know, I got in there, 5 minutes out, boom, $79. So that's it.
There you go. You know what? I have to say, grandchildren and LimeWire probably account for 95% of the reasons why computer techs exist.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned LimeWire, because I got a call from a customer and I fixed her computer probably 3 months ago. And she called me and she told me that her computer was running very slow. So I say, fine, you know, I'm going to dial in. I'm going to check it out. Let me see what's going on. Every time I fix a computer, I install Log Me In so that I can dial in remotely, you know, and just take care of it.
Right.
So I told her, I'm going to dial in tonight. I'm going to take a look at it and let me see what's going on. When I dial in, I noticed that they had installed LimeWire on it, and I told her about it. So the next day when I spoke with her, I didn't speak with her because she went to sleep, and she told me, when you're done, go ahead and turn the computer off and then we'll talk tomorrow. So that's fine.
Yeah, right.
So the next day when I spoke with her, I told her, you know, somebody installed LimeWire in that computer, and that software is not very, it's not a very good, it doesn't have a good reputation.
Right.
So, you know, I cannot be responsible for the problems that your computer is having because somebody, you know, pretty much went out on their own and decided to install applications that, you know, are not supposed to be installed. So, I mean, this is something that I'm going to have to bill you for, and, you know, you're going to have to pay for it. And
right.
Then she got all upset, saying that she didn't install LimeWire. And when I went there, I know that she has two kids. I say kids, but they're grown up, you know, 19, 21.
Right.
And I know that they had LimeWire installed before. And when I gave her the computer, it was a fresh install. I told her, make sure that you don't install any software that, you know, is going to create problem. So the point of the story is that customers, sometimes they think they're pretty savvy. But I was glad that I got print screens of the, the add remove section of the computer. And I email her the print screens and I show her that LimeWire was indeed installed. So she couldn't debate that. And at the end, she had to pay for it. You know, I'm not going to be working for free. And
well, why would she want you to work for free?
I know, and I told her, your warranty is 30 days, and that's another question that I was going to ask you. What kind of warranty did you provide to your customers, and what kind of warranty do people normally have out there? My standard plan is 30 days. After 30 days, if the computer is not in the same conditions as how I left the computer, then, you know, it's a billable issue.
Right.
So I don't know what kind of warranty plan you had in place.
I didn't have anything concrete, but if I did, and this is not the way to operate, by the way, but if anybody did ask, I think I would say, it was either 30 or 60 days.
Yeah.
But I said we cannot warranty viruses. So
No, of course, yeah.
But I mean, I made sure I told them that. Because
yes.
The same, you know, like you said, they could literally be infected tomorrow and blame it on us. So
I know.
How long was it after you fixed this computer before it got infected?
3 months.
Oh, and she wanted you to fix it for free.
I know, yeah. So, you know, anyway, she had to pay for that.
Sure.
The other thing that I want to make a comment is I hear some people, they mentioned that they fix computer for $30 and $40.
Yeah.
And my advice is, if you start fixing computers for $30 or $40 for your customers, thinking that you're going to build up some kind of customer base, you're going to end up fixing computers for $30 and $40. Because if you raise your price for customer number one, let's say, and the first repair, it was $30 or $40, the next time when you build them twice, you know, they may go with somebody else instead, right, instead of paying you for the rate. So, right. I mean, I'm not, you know, encouraging low rate repairs, because it, at the end, I don't think it will work. You have customers calling you, and you have, you know, sometimes you, in my case, I offer free pickup and delivery 5 miles from my house. So sometimes you have to drive and you have to spend time, and, you know, it's gas and it's your time. So at the end, $30, $40 is going to cost you more than just, you know, the repair that you think that is making you money, and it's not.
Yeah.
So, I mean, next year I'm planning on raising my price. Right now I'm charging $79 simply for installing Windows. $99 if they want their data to be restored, you know, my pictures, my documents.
Right.
Next year, I'm going to change that. It's going to be $89 for a flat Windows installation and $109 including data. So little by little, I'm planning on raising my rate.
Yeah, I see what you're saying about the starting your rates low. I mean, it's one thing to start your rates, you know, fair, and then you could kind of inch them up a little bit without too much trouble. But if you're starting out charging $30 and then the next year you want to charge $60 or $90, that's too mm-hmm. much of a jump. So you are undercutting yourself too much. You know, I got to say, in some guy's defense, and I don't have reality on this, so I don't know how real it is. They say that's in their towns, that's the going rate for repairs, like $30, $40. I think one guy was 25 or something like that, because that's what everybody else is charging. It might be a small town or something like that, and that's just what the cost of living and stuff denotes how much they're charging.
But I don't know. That's hard to swallow.
I know. It sounds amazing to me too.
Yeah.
But
the other thing is, I know that you guys mentioned that, and I'm switching gears here.
Yeah.
This is for cleaning the screens on laptops and computers. I've been using Windex for more than 10 years, and I've never had a problem with the screen. You know, a bottle of Windex is $2. You just sprayed out Windex on a paper towel, and you just clean the screen, you clean the laptop, and I don't know. That's my approach.
Hey, I don't know. I guess if you actually are doing it, that's one thing. But you hear nightmare stories about it, and maybe it's the ammonia that's in it or something is caustic. I'm not sure.
My laptop has been with me for probably almost 3 years already, and I clean my laptop almost every week. So I never had any problems with it.
That's a good point. At least you're brave enough to do it on the computers. I'm glad you're telling us this. Now, even on glossy screens and everything else, no problem, right?
No problems.
I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. I don't know where that whole thing got started. Maybe it was started by the monitor wipes companies.
Probably. They're trying to look for some excuses to make people buy their products, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Let me see. The other thing that I have here, I know that Lalo Nunez mentioned this also, and a couple of other guys have talked about this. I'm getting a lot of requests from customers that they want to downgrade from Vista to XP.
Okay.
And the problem that you have is when you do that, when you try to run the XP installation, it comes up saying that, you know, there's no hard drive found, and it requires for you to get some special SATA drivers and use the F6 option, you know.
Yep.
when you're doing the installation.
And boot from a and use a floppy drive in conjunction with that.
I have a better approach.
Yes.
And I tested this last week. Okay. What I did is I took the drive out. I reformatted the drive on my laptop, you know, using the USB connector.
Yeah.
And I use NTFS quick format.
Right.
And then I put the hard drive back on the laptop and I run the installation and not a single hic. It went straight through XP, no problems, no errors, and no nothing.
Wow.
So that's a little tip that can help a lot of people that are having some problems with this downgrade from Vista to XP. And the same thing with Windows 7 to XP. And you're going to ask me, why in the world would I downgrade from Windows 7 to XP? Sometimes the processors are not compatible with Windows 7. And I came across one problem, one laptop that this was the case, and I had to downgrade it.
You mean the laptop came with Windows 7?
The laptop came with Windows 7, but the customer decided to upgrade it to, I'm sorry, Windows XP.
Oh.
But the customer decided on his own to upgrade it to Windows 7.
Right.
And the processor was not able to handle it, and it was just so slow, so he wanted to go back.
Right.
And that's when I use it also.
Wow, why the heck would that be, that if you do a quick format, it will recognize it? It doesn't make sense.
I have no idea, but it's working fine for me. It's got to be something to do with the way how the file format, it's handled, probably is different from XP than from Vista and Windows 7, but it's working far. So far, it's working fine for me.
What computer do you use to format it? What operating system is running on that computer?
Windows XP.
Windows XP. I see.
Yeah. And I've used also Windows 7. So, I mean, I have a Windows XP bench computer, and I also have my Windows 7 laptop. So either one will do the job.
Wow. Beats me. That's amazing.
It's working fine. That'll be a question for Super Scott.
Yeah, or you know what? I bet I'll get a flood of emails saying, Steve, you're a dummy. You should know this, and then tell me why it's happening.
Well, I don't know. I was a dummy also until I experimented with it.
Yeah, well, that's good you experimented with. That's a great fix.
Yeah. The other thing that I want to talk about is you've mentioned a lot Google AdWords, and for me, Google AdWords works fine only as a part-time tool, because here's the problem. And when I say as a part-time, I tweak the schedule settings in Google AdWords so that my ads will run only weekdays when I'm off work. So they start from 5 o'clock in the afternoon until 11 o'clock at night.
Right.
And the reason for that is because when I started using Google AdWords 24/7, I was getting a lot of calls while I was at work, and I cannot answer the phone at work, you know, when it's my personal business.
Right.
So I was losing a lot of customers because I will, you know, they want immediate response. Sure. They don't want to be leaving voice messages.
Right, of course.
So using Google AdWords, you know, adjusting the schedule fits my needs. So on the weekend, it's 24/7. On the weekdays, I only run it from 5 to 11 o'clock at night. So that's working fine for me.
Yeah. Well, when you started off talking about AdWords, you started off saying it was a problem.
It's working fine for me. That's a beautiful tool.
It's a great, I mean, I was just going to say it's a great tool. Tell me what other advertising allows you to like schedule when you're going to get your traffic. I mean,
let me tell you, I was researching the Facebook approach, advertising program.
Yeah.
And I went through the wizard, and it's nothing compared to Google AdWords.
Yeah.
It doesn't give you the flexibility that Google AdWords has. So I say, forget it. I'm not going to go with this.
Exactly.
It doesn't give you the flexibility of picking and choosing your zip code, your area, how far from your house, and, you know, being very selective. So I decided not to go with it.
I agree. I did the Facebook thing, too, for a little while. I got no results. But yep. I love AdWords. I always can't say enough about it. And I don't think people really understand how you can customize it to really laser target your audience just for your area. You don't, there's no waste of money. I mean, there's not like people in California, if you live in the East Coast, people in California aren't going to call you. You're not going to waste clicks. You set everything up. And what you just said is you could set up your location plus your schedule. Your ad will turn off after a certain hour and turn on at 5 o'clock at night. Come on. There's no other advertising like that around.
I always think of you whenever Google AdWords works as a switch light. You know, you turn it off, you turn it on whenever you want. So, yeah. I mean, that works nice.
I love it. It is. You turn it on and off like a light.
Yep. Let me see. I have another thing here. Business accounts.
Yeah.
If you are in the consulting business for computer repairs, you really have to tackle small business account. Not small. You can start with small, but business accounts.
Why?
That's where the money is.
Okay.
I recently met a friend of my wife that he was opening a daycare here in the Coconut Creek area. And I got that job. I was hired to do the general overview of setting up the site. I do the inside wiring, coordinate the T1 installation with the carrier, which is AT&T, coordinate the configuration of the router, set up the video camera system, set up the server, set up the office computer, the reception computer, the printers, the scanners, email, printing, everything. Wow. I mean, this job, it was probably a full-time job after my job.
Wow.
at night for a few days. And, it brought a lot of good income. Just a single business account by itself represented a large income for, a month or so. So I decided to research how can I tackle businesses that are opening in my area. So I said, you know what? I've heard about the Small Business Administration, right. The government. So I called them up and I set up a meeting, and I found out that there's a database that they have available for free through the Occupational License Department. I think that's what they call it.
Okay.
So any business that is registered in the Broward County, they have to have a occupational license, and it gets registered in the database. So you have the business name. You can sort by zip code, so that helps me to pick and choose which zip codes I want to work with. And the approach that I'm going to be taking now is I have a little advertising material that I'm going to be sending via mail. And that hopefully it's like a sort of a mailing list. And I'm hoping that that's going to help me, pick up more business accounts. So that's the approach that I'm going to be taking pretty soon. And hopefully I'm going to end up with more business accounts.
How many? So you just get the list from the Small Business Association?
Yes, it's a downloadable file.
Does it cost anything? Or
no, it's free.
Huh, that's great. It's
free. So I guess the idea is, in every county, you just get in touch with the Small Business Administration in your area, find out how to get a listing of those businesses that are opening in your area. And, you can stop by and give them a visit and just send them promotional material and let them know that you are there and who you are and what you do.
It's a great idea. I mean, it's a little bit like kind of cold calling the businesses. What are you going to send them or call them?
I'm going to send them first.
Yeah.
But, the listing that I get, it's about 100 customers every week. But that's the entire Broward County.
Wow.
Targeting only businesses that are within my area. So, my approach is probably first, I'm going to tackle them by mail. and then maybe a visit, you know,
yeah,
just see if that helps.
I think it's a great idea. I mean, these guys are just starting. They might need somebody to get their computer system set up. So
I'll give you an example. I got a call from a guy that owns a pharmacy, and he says, I saw your ad in your car. I have my cart magnets everywhere I drive. So he called me and he said, I saw your ad in your car. You know, you do computer repair. Yes, I do. So I went in the next day and I stopped by his business and he said, okay, I want you to take this computer and install Windows XP. I want you to take this one and get rid of the hard drive and install a new one. At the end, I fixed like five computers. And then he wanted me to do additional work in his home. He wanted to set up a new wireless printer. And he had like three or four Dell laptops. Some of them needed screens to be replaced. So, I mean, it was a big job just from a single call from a business. So business is what I'm targeting
right now. You got a taste. You got a taste of the business.
I got a taste and I like it.
Well, I mean, yeah, businesses are willing to spend money. I mean, they have cash flow, most of them, and they're willing to spend to get things right. They just want things to work.
So, and they don't mind spending the money as long as you give them good quality service.
Right, right.
Yeah. The other thing that is working out for me in regards to reaching out for customers is I have a customer loyalty program in place. So every new customer that I get, I always let them know about this program that I have. And pretty much it works this way. For any new customer referral that I get from them, they get $10 off a future computer repair, or they get $10 cash, or they get a small 4 gig USB flash drive. Now, you're going to tell me, how does that work? A full computer repair night right now goes for $99 on my list. So at the end, I'm gaining a new customer for $89 right. or less. And you have to provide some kind of incentive so that they can, you know, come back and so far it's been working fine for me. I mean, I'm getting a lot of referrals based on that program. So that's working okay.
Do they actually say like, I want my $10 or?
Believe it or not, the majority of them, they go for the 4 gig USB flash drive,
right?
Which, by the way, you can buy them by bulk on the web. You know, you can get them for $6, $7, $8,
right.
or you know, just buy them through Newegg or whichever vendor you use. But make sure that you buy them in quantities because that's how you get discounts. So that helps me a lot.
I can imagine. That's great offering those like special plans. Yep. I was always a little too lazy to do anything like that.
Yeah.
You know, I keep track of it and this and that. But I think it's a great idea. And if you do have the drive to
do it.
Any way you could to get people in the door and continuing to refer, like for them to have them talk to other people over word of mouth, referrals, it's great. So in addition to great customer service, you know.
And yes, and also what I do is every time I get a new customer, when I deliver their computers, I always bring with me like, you know, advertising material, who is 123 Computer Repair, who
right.
I am,
right.
what I do, and some of the brochures that I have. And if you look on my website, I always put some kind of advertising or some kind of promotional material. There's something going on my website. So.
Good.
There's something, you know, there.
It's 123computerrepair.com.
Yes, and then you go to the special promotions tab, and that's pretty much, you know, anything new that I offer, it's always there.
Cool.
So that helps me a lot. The other thing that I do is I have a blog, and I try to post every weekday when it's possible. Based on my schedule, sometimes I cannot. But, you know, keeping customers informed via your blog, it always helps. It's a great tool for me to also promote some of the offers that I have. And I use Google FeedBurner for that. So that gives my it gives me visibility to my website, and it's another advertising tool that that I use when you want to send promotional material. And just, you know, tips and tricks for customers to be informed.
Do they actually use that? I can't imagine that unless you tell your customers via email or something to go to the site, that they would check back for tips and stuff.
I tell them that I have a blog, that there's a newsletter that I send on a regular basis. Some of them subscribe, some of them not.
Right.
I send out personalized individual emails to every one of my customers. I don't like the idea of sending just bulk email
right.
to a bunch of, you know, users on my email list. So
that takes time, though, doesn't it?
It takes time, but the customer feels that it's an individual attention that you're giving to them. You know, like Mr. Brown, this is a special promotion that Microsoft may have at the end of the year, the Windows Family Pack. If you're planning on upgrading, make sure that you keep this in mind. Let me know, you know, things like that. So
how do you actually sit there and send each one by one, or do you use like a bulk mailing list that allows you to personalize them?
No, I send it one by one. But of course, you know, I have a template that I draft, and
right.
then you adjust the settings base. If you send in the email to, you know, an individual user, if you send an email to a senior person, if you send an email. The other thing that I have, I think it's a problem for me, it's I have to deal with a large Spanish customer base. And sometimes, you know, it's not just sending an email out in plain English. I have to translate it and make sure that they feel comfortable and that they get the message in Spanish. So I know that your friend from Sacramento, Quando Computer, I forgot his website.
There's Computer Doctor with a Q.
Yeah, the train guy.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so he has his website in Spanish and in English. And, you know, that's something that I may have to do because some of my customers, they don't speak any English at all.
Yeah.
And I have to make it easy for them and just pretty much, make sure that they understand the content of my website.
Sure. Yeah, you got to. And I think he was targeting Spanish because I think he was getting a lot of his business from there.
Yep. I remember that. I have a tool that I use, not a lot, but I use it whenever I have to, and it's called PC Mover, and this is made by Laplink.
Yes.
And the idea is, let's say that you have an old, very old computer that you want to migrate to a new computer.
Right.
But you want to have your applications. I know you can clone it, you can ghost it, but this is so simple because this application also moves applications based on individual settings. So let's say that you want to move a specific, very old archive accounting package from an old Windows XP computer
right.
to a new one because you want more power and you want more resources. You simply install the application on the old computer. You install it on the new computer. Make sure that both computers are on a network or on a bench or something where they both have visibility. And it simply does the job.
It does
the job. And
I'm skeptical of this.
I've used it before and it works fine. So
this is like the lifelong Windows problem.
Yeah, but it's very reliable and it works fine for me. So, I mean, if I ever come across a situation like this, I'll use it and I continue to use it. I've used it so far like 4 times and I never had a glitch.
Wow. You know what? I have heard of it. And I think somebody else did. It might have been you from last time said it, that it does work. But mm-hmm. I've never used it personally and I think it's a great application. But, okay, let me ask you this. Is it does it allow you to take programs from Windows XP and put them on like a Windows 7 machine, for example, or does it have to be the same operating system?
I've done only same versions. I haven't tried with different versions of Windows, but that's something that I'll have to research. I haven't tried that.
If it could do that, that would be pretty amazing.
It, yeah.
Does it also copy like all their documents and other files too?
Yes, because the it has like a menu where you pick and choose which users you want to bring over, which applications, and it's a full menu that allows you to pick and choose what you want to do with the move.
How much does it cost?
I think it's like $59 or $69.
Is that like a business license?
I think it's an individual license for one computer only.
Gotcha.
But there's some cases where, you know, it comes in handy and you got to use it.
Sure.
Email. I have a tip for people that are trying to troubleshoot email problems. And I'll give you an example. I had a user on our network that we use Outlook 2003, not 2007 yet. We use 2003. Mm-hmm. And the user called me and said, Jorge, I'm having problems with moving folders in my email. And I went there and I checked, yes. So he was having problems moving the folders and he couldn't right click and move it. I mean, it just wouldn't work. So I say, okay, let's do this on your laptop. He has a company provided laptop. On the laptop, it was working fine. So I say, fine, this is a computer problem. Well, I ended up installing the Windows 2003 service packs. I ended up compacting the OSD file. I ended up checking and changing permissions on the folders. The end of the story is, when you come across this kind of problem in email, go ahead and create a fresh new profile, test it, make sure that everything works okay. And that's what ended up happening in this case. A fresh new profile did the job.
And then what, you had to drag all his emails from the old one to the new one?
No, because in Exchange, when you create a new profile, remember, Exchange, the data is sitting on the server. So you don't have to drag. Everything synchronizes through the Outlook client.
I see. I'm not familiar with Exchange.
Yeah, but if you're dealing with POP3 or IMAP,
yes,
then in that case, you may have to export the emails and import the emails into the new profile. But creating a new profile normally handles the job.
Good one. All right, good tip.
Yeah, I like that one. The other thing that I had a chance to try was Office 2010.
Yeah.
I had a customer that he wanted to install the Office Outlook 2010. And Microsoft is offering the free trial versions. So you simply download it, you install it, and it does the migration process is so simple. It's just easy and it works nice. You just download the trial version, install it, and if you have your email profiles, it just transfers all your emails and all your settings automatically. So I like that.
You said from 2007 to 2010 or from 2003?
From 2003 or 2007,
both.
Whichever version you have, it migrates all your settings automatically. It's like an automatic upgrade.
Right, right.
The only catch is make sure that if you're going to change the settings in your profile on Outlook 2010, it will give you a warning that if you tweak the settings, you can no longer back to your 2003 or 2007 profile. So you got to be careful with that.
I see.
Okay. And
this is good to know. I mean, I like reports on Microsoft software just to see, like, to know if it works or if the updates are working fine or new versions are working fine. So, and I'm not a big fan of Outlook, so it's good to know that it works.
I have another report here, yes. Microsoft Security Essentials.
Okay. All right.
I'm not sure what's going on lately, but I've come across three computers already that I've done the installation and it just sits on the update screen and it doesn't finish. It never goes through the whole process of finishing the update. I don't know if it's a problem. I mean, I do my installations through nightnight.com.
Yes.
To be honest with you, I don't know if it's something related to the way how Nightnight is handling the installation. I really doubt it, but I ran a test and I downloaded Microsoft Security Essentials from Microsoft website, and I run the install, and it run perfectly fine. So I, at this point, I'm going to have to keep on trying and testing. I hope it's nothing related to Nightnight, because I love those guys and I love that website.
It's got to be, though, right? It has to be, though, right? It didn't happen when you didn't use Nightnight.
It didn't happen when I used Nightnight. And the other thing that I noticed is not only Microsoft, but also AVG, the installation takes forever. And
when you do it on Nightnight?
When you do it on Nightnight. So I don't know. I mean, again, I don't want to blame Nightnight, because I'm just giving you preliminary feedback on recent repairs that I've done.
That is interesting. Well, I guess as far as Nightnight goes, you could still use, if it is Nightnight that's causing the problem, you could still use Nightnight for everything else you install. What other stuff do you use Nightnight for?
Pretty much for anything that I install on my customer's computer. You know, normally what I do is I use that for like the Adobe Reader, Flash, Java, Microsoft Security Essentials. Some people, they ask me to install iTunes. Some people, they want Skype. Some users, they want Messenger. Pretty much that's what I install. I don't overload my customers with applications that they don't need. So I just keep it simple.
Gotcha. That's good. I agree with that philosophy.
The other thing that I want to talk about real quick here, sure. Google Chrome. I don't know if you guys have been using Google Chrome lately, but I've been using it. And let me tell you, I'm loving it.
What do you like about it?
Well, just the fact that when you go into the settings and you put in your email address, it brings over all your settings, your bookmarks, everything, you know, your history, everything. I mean, and it doesn't matter which computer you use it, as long as you put your email address on it, you have all your settings.
Hmm.
You know, in Internet Explorer, you're familiar with Xmarks.
Yes.
It's a utility that exports and it synchronizes your bookmarks over the web.
Yeah, I love Xmarks.
I don't need that with Google Chrome. Google Chrome, I just put in my credentials and boom, everything is there.
So you have to set up one Google Chrome browser basically from scratch. And then every time you install one on another computer, you could just import everything from that first one.
Well, when you install it, you have to make sure that you go into the settings in Google Chrome and you type in your email address and your password. Once you do that, then it brings over all your settings.
From another Google Chrome installation, you mean? Not from Internet Explorer.
No. This is based on Google's. The way how Google Chrome works is everything is embedded on your email account. So all my settings, I'm assuming, that are migrated to Google, but they are attached to my email address.
What settings are you talking about?
When you go into Google's and you go into the options,
mm-hmm.
You go into, I think it's personal stuff, and then sync. There's an option there where you put your email address and your password.
All right. I'm with you on this, but I'm just asking what settings do you get transferred over? When you say it transfers over all your settings.
All my favorites, all my bookmarks, everything.
Now, all these things that you have, these favorites and bookmarks and stuff, you had to get them into Chrome on at least one browser manually.
Yes. The first time, I had to do all the work.
Right, first time. But now, after the first time, you can install Chrome anywhere, type in your email address. Yeah, now that's great. It's like Xmarks, basically.
Yes.
You're right. That's cool. That's really cool.
But it's on the web and it's on Google's site. So, I mean, I love that.
Yeah. Gosh, I think I have a feeling if I get off Firefox, I'm going to get addicted to Chrome.
I'm not a Firefox fan, to be honest with you. For me, Firefox runs so slow. I mean, you launch Firefox and it takes its time to load.
Yeah.
That's what I've noticed with Firefox. I use Google Chrome as my primary browser, and I use Internet Explorer as my secondary browser.
You think Internet Explorer is faster than Firefox?
No, okay. I think Firefox is faster.
Okay.
It's lighter. It's less bulky. Response time is faster. So, I mean, I love it.
I'm going to give Chrome a try.
Got to give it a shot. I mean, it helps. The browser itself, it looks very simple, but it does its job.
Yeah. I've used it. I've installed it on occasion, but I never made it my go-to browser. But since you told me about that Xmark, well, plus you could get Xmarks for Chrome anyway, but... I would rather not have to install Xmarks.
And not only that, I mean, I keep everything in Google. I have my contacts in Google. Yeah. I have a Gmail account in Google. I got my new Evo phone. Everything synchronizes. You know, you just put in your email address and your password, and boom.
Yeah.
Everything shows up on your Evo phone automatically. So, I mean.
are you liking that phone?
Oh, man, I love it.
That's the one I have. I have the same one.
I'm so glad I was deciding on buying the new iPhone 4 or the Evo phone. And I finally decided to go with the Evo because, I mean, I just fell in love with that phone.
Yeah.
And my wife is loving it. She's on Facebook the whole day. So so I like it.
So you got two phones?
We got two, yeah. We have a family plan, and she has one, and I have another one.
Nice. Yeah, that's an amazing phone. I'm really like mine as well. We actually started a show on Android apps.
Really?
Yep.
So
you should come on. You should come on as a guest host.
All right.
Cool.
Let me see. I have another thing. I was working on the show notes for My Hard Drive Die, and I noticed that Ben has a computer repair show. What's his what's his website?
Q-E-T-U-O.me, I think. He calls it Ketuo.
Yeah. I like the fact that he talks about software updates, and he has his own sort of Leo type of monologue, and he brings some tips and tricks on some of the repairs that he's done so far. So, Ben, keep it up. You're doing a good job, man.
Ben, also known as Nebin.
Nebin.
For the Podnuts people, might know him by that. And it's he's got a couple shows, but the one you're talking about, I think it's called Ben's Tech Show, right?
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. Check it out. Definitely. Ketuo.
Yep. Yep. The other thing is, I came across two computers that I had to replace the power supplies. I love those jobs, man. 5 minutes, it's money in the bank.
I'm with you on this.
The other thing that I'm getting a lot of requests for is for DVDs duplication. I don't do them myself, so I just refer them to a friend of mine who deals with that. So that's something that I'm getting lately.
Really? Like for movies?
Yeah. Movies and videos and things like that.
You mean like movies, like home movies?
Yeah. I had a customer that was asking for a duplication for a show that he wanted to see down here at a casino. And he wanted to have some CDs to be duplicated for his friends.
Cool.
And I just have my friend that works on that. So, I mean, that's... But if somebody is thinking about doing some real money on that, that's another...
Yeah, it definitely is. I thought about it for making my laptop repair videos on DVD. I take them to a place called Discmasters in New Jersey.
Really?
And they sell equipment to let you do it yourself. And every time I get a catalog for them, I seriously think about it. You could buy a disc duplicator with like 8 drives, I think for like $500 or something like that. And you can just do like 8 discs at a time, you know?
Yeah. Wow. All right. I guess it's time for email. I'm out of topics here. So
okay. Well, you brought a lot of stuff. That was great.
Thank you.
This one's from Kevin. He says, "Hey, Steve, I just had a call from what sounded like an older gentleman. He wanted me to look over a 4-year-old XP system to be sure it was okay. But my question is this. If a potential customer wanted references from previous customer, what is the ethics on that? I mean, out of courtesy to one of my previous computer... Out of courtesy to one of my previous customers, I called her in advance to see if it was okay for this guy to call her as a reference. I can understand his side of the table. Here he is calling somebody from Craigslist and not really trusting me. But did I do the right thing by calling my previous customer for her permission? She seemed okay with it and gave me a good comment to this guy. I also apologized profusely for calling her on a Sunday afternoon, but she seemed okay with that too. What are your thoughts? Keep up the good work. Kevin from Akron. Kevin, and this is Reliant in the chat room. This is, for me personally, when I don't know. This is just me personally. This is what I did. I'm just going to be blunt, and it may not be right or wrong, but I don't know. When somebody came in and asked me for references, I didn't give them. I sat in the shop, and I said, you know, I have this shop. We have a sign out front. We've been here for a while. All of our customers are happy, and we'd be happy to work on your computer. I say something along those lines. And if they say, well, how can I trust you and blah, blah, I basically just gave it back to them. And like I said, like, you know, you're just going to have to trust us. The reason I did this is because I really didn't want super paranoid people on as my customer base anyway. Now, I guess all people that ask for references aren't super paranoid, but I didn't even want to bother. I had enough business that I was doing fine. If they didn't trust me from just the conversation I had with them, that wasn't good enough for me. I mean, I think that if somebody's sitting in my shop talking to me, and if they still are not sure about me, then I think they're going to be a problem in the future. Now, that being said, an ad on Craigslist is a little different story. If they don't even see your face and they're calling you kind of out of the blue, they may want references. It'd be a really good idea if you can get some customers who are Angie's List members, and if they can write review, if you give them good service, they'll write reviews on you. So you can always refer people to Angie's List. Google reviews are, if you get your business in Google, they allow you to enter reviews in there. So you could tell your customers that you do work for, please go to this link and leave me a review on Google. This way you can have a base of reviews to send people to. I think what I did is kind of wrong. It would be a good idea to have a place where somebody could go and see reviews and feedback on your company. Also, on the Tech Website Builder, I have a little block for testimonial. You can put testimonials on your website for your computer repair business. That's probably the easiest thing to do. Just anybody who asks for references, say, well, go to my site and you could read references from happy customers there. So it's always a good idea to have testimonials there too. The way I did it, I guess, was a little cocky, but that's my philosophy on the whole thing, at least in my shop. But as far as Craigslist and doing it mobile, it might be a little tougher to pull that off. What do you think, Jorge?
Yeah. Regarding those comments, so far I only receive requests for referrals from one customer because she was kind of hesitating to do repairs with somebody that she didn't know. And you know, she saw my ad. I do a publishing on a weekly bulletin at my church, and that's where she saw my ad. So I told her, you know, Father George, I know Father George for X amount of years. So she knew that I was talking about somebody that she already knew at church. So then she felt comfortable.
Yeah, I guess it's nice to accommodate them any way you can. If you have references that you can easily give, that's fine.
That helps, yes.
It's a judgment call, Kevin, I think. Just maybe if you have a customer that you know you're on good terms with and they're not going to mind if you give them a call or think it's weird, then I guess it's okay to call them as well. But I told you how I did it. That's how I do it. Did it anyway. And right or wrong, that's what I did. Okay. Get some other emails here. We got about four more. This one's from Peter. Peter says, hey, I thought your listeners may be interested in this. It's a memory tester from Microscope. And let me check this out. I haven't even checked it yet. Here we go. It's the website is M, like Mary, 2ktech.com. So m2ktech.com. The tool is called Memscope Memory Tester. If you scroll down to the bottom, you can download it for free. Peter recommended that. I have not tried it yet. He seems to like it. So thank you for that, Peter. Okay, another one from Kevin here. He says, hey, guys, I was reading Life Hacker the other day, and they had this cable supply website on one of their many stories. Take a look. It's comparable to monoprice.com, but it's called deepsurplus.com. Let's check that out now. Okay, it looks nice. It's nice to have an alternative to monoprice. We don't want to have them to have a monopoly. And heck, anywhere you could get cables that you know, are not going to compare to the price of Monster cables, it's a good idea. Where do you get your cables, Jorge?
I have a big box of cables and junk that I accumulate here. So far, I haven't been, I haven't had the need to buy any cable. So I just pull it out from my magic drawer and bill my customers for it. That's it.
There you go. That's even cheaper.
Yep.
All right, this one's from Mike. He says, hey, Steve, and he's talking about the episode we did with Mike Motto from MFL STC Computer. I think it was last Podnest Daily or the one before. Anyway, he says, Steve, the term for the computer without a monitor, keyboard, and mouse that Mike was talking about is a headless server, headless in quotes. Most servers are run as headless units because you had to have a separate keyboard, mouse, and monitor for each server in a large server room, or you would soon be overrun by them. Most servers still do include KVM hookups for system setup and the occasional need, but some manufacturers opt to get rid of them altogether to cut cost. In order to service the server, they are shipped with an embedded web server for maintenance and setup over the network. For a home setup, most enterprise class servers are really overkill. The hardware in a server isn't any different in almost all cases. It has just been tested to higher reliability standards. For anyone with an old PC around to repurpose, there isn't a need to buy any special server or hardware. Even the cheapest consumer motherboards today come with RAID and are more than fast enough to keep up in a home environment. That's from Michael. Thanks, Michael. Yeah, I guess, you know, like when Mike Motto set up his network, if he did use a server, I guess it doesn't hurt to use hardware that's, you know, tested the higher reliability standards. But I guess what Mike's saying here is you could use any old computer and it'll pretty much be okay. Anything to add to that, Jorge?
I agree. You know, if you're going to set up something in your house, a decent cheap computer will do the job. I mean, servers are pretty much for the corporate office, unless you're looking for something very, very reliable and a lot of force, then you may want to go with servers. But HP sells pretty decent low-end servers for small businesses that they come with RAID configuration so that you can mirror drives and do network settings. So, you know, for home, I don't really see the real need for a heavy-duty server.
Right. You know, I think Mike, he told me, I think he got a super deal on this thing. It was like under $200. That might have played a fact part in the decision there.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me read this last email here, and then we'll end off. This is from Lee. He says, I just wanted to alert you on a great free set of utilities available at karenware.com. That's karenware.com. I have used her replicator program for several years now. It is easy to set up and provides direct access to your backup files. They are not compressed into one big file. Many other useful utilities are available here. I've been a listener of your podcast for over a year now. I especially enjoy Podnuts Daily, but also listen to Nuts at Night and the Great Tech Debate. I'm age 71, retired from the legacy AT&T company. I do freelance computer repair mostly for seniors of my age and greater. Keep up the good work. That's from Lee. Lee, thank you very much for the compliments on the shows. I'm glad you're enjoying them. And I am especially glad that you sent in something that we could share with everybody else. KarenWare.com. I have not been there. Let's check it out right now, actually. Definitely. She's definitely a girl. She's got the girly font. That's cool. Good for her. I wonder if there is another girl's name of a site that has all kinds of utilities, tweaks, and fixes. I think it's called Kelly something. I don't know if it's Kelly as a guy or a girl though. Kelly something. Oh gosh, I can't remember. It's been such
Kelly's
a long time.
Corner.
Yeah, Kelly's Corner. That's what it is. That's what it is. You got it. All right. Well, that's going to be it for the emails. Thank you guys for sending them in. If you want to send an email to the show, send it at mail@podnuts.com. It's really easy to remember. If you want to send a voicemail, we have a new phone number. It's, gosh, let me see if I can remember it. It's so new. I think it's 606. I got to find out what it is, guys. I got a Google Voice number, and let me figure it out right now. Okay, I found the number. It is 7076-POD-NUT. I tried as close as I could, guys, to get Pod Nuts in there, but this is as close as I could get. So if you want to send a voicemail, this will go to my Google Voice account. It's 7076-POD-NUT. Hopefully it's easy to remember. Or easy enough to remember. So send us voicemails. I definitely want to get more of them in the hopper here. My line has been down on Skype for the voicemails, so I haven't been able to receive them. But this is up and running, so definitely send us that. Jorge, want to thank you very much for being on the show and sharing all the great tips with us.
Well, I want to say thank you for allowing me to be on the show. This is the second time that I've been on the show, and I look forward for doing another one in the future. So thank you very much.
I look forward to you signing up in the future, too. Thanks again. And if anybody does want to sign up for Podnuts Daily, you can do that as well. You go to podnuts.com/guests. I should have the August dates open. We have the full month of the full month of September open. So as soon as I put those dates in there, you guys can go and sign up. Anybody who wants to be on the show can do so. If you have tips that you want to share with everybody else. That is going to be it for today's show. See y'all next time. Music for Podnuts Daily has been provided by Evan King at purevolume.com/Evan King.